Exodus. Andy Hertzfeld had taken a leave of absence after the Macintosh came out in 1984. He needed to recharge his batteries and get away from his supervisor, Bob Belville, whom he didn't like. One day he learned that Jobs had given out bonuses of up to $50,000 to engineers on the Macintosh team. So he went to Jobs to ask for one. Jobs responded that Belville had decided not to give the bonuses to people who were on leave. Hertzfeld later heard that the decision had actually been made by Jobs, so he confronted him. At first, Jobs equivocated. Then he said, "Well, let's assume what you are saying is true. How does that change things?" Hertzfeld said that if Jobs was withholding the bonus as a reason for him to come back, then he wouldn't come back as a matter of principle. Jobs relented, but it left Hertzfeld with a bad taste. When his leave was coming to an end, Hertzfeld made an appointment to have dinner with Jobs, and they walked from his office to an Italian restaurant a few blocks away. "I really want to return," he told Jobs, "but things seem really messed up right now." Jobs was vaguely annoyed and distracted, but Hertzfeld plunged ahead. "The software team is completely demoralized and has hardly done a thing for months, and Burl is so frustrated that he won't last till the end of the year." At that point, Jobs cut him off. "You don't know what you're talking about," he said. "The Macintosh team is doing great, and I'm having the best time of my life right now. You're just completely out of touch." His stare was withering, but he also tried to look amused at Hertzfeld's assessment. "If you really believe that, I don't think there's any way that I can come back," Hertzfeld replied glumly. "The Mac team that I want to come back to doesn't even exist anymore." "The Mac team had to grow up, and so do you," Jobs replied. "I want you to come back, but if you don't want to, that's up to you. You don't matter as much as you think you do anyway." Hertzfeld didn't come back. By early 1985, Burl Smith was also ready to leave. He had worried that it would be hard to quit if Jobs tried to talk him out of it. The reality distortion field was usually too strong for him to resist. So he plotted with Hertzfeld how he could break free of it. "I've got it," he told Hertzfeld one day. "I know the perfect way to quit that will nullify the reality distortion field. I'll just walk into Steve's office, pull down my pants, and urinate on his desk. What could he say to that? It's guaranteed to work." The betting on the Mac team was that even brave Burl Smith would not have the gumption to do that. When he finally decided he had to make his break around the times of Jobs' birthday bash, he made an appointment to see Jobs. He was surprised to find Jobs smiling broadly when he walked in. "Are you going to do it? Are you really gonna do it?" Jobs asked. He had heard about the plan. Smith looked at him. "Do I have to? I'll do it if I have to." Jobs gave him a look, and Smith decided it wasn't necessary. So he resigned less dramatically and walked out on good terms. He was quickly followed by another of the great Macintosh engineers, Bruce Horn. When Horn went in to say goodbye, Jobs told him, "Everything that's wrong with the Mac is your fault." Horn responded, "Well, actually, Steve, a lot of the things that are right with the Mac are my fault, and I had to fight like crazy to get those things in." "You're right," admitted Jobs. "I'll give you 15,000 shares to stay." When Horn declined the offer, Jobs showed his warmer side. "Well, give me a hug," he said, and so they hugged. But the biggest news that month was the departure from Apple, yet again, of its co-founder, Steve Wozniak. Wozniak was then quietly working as a mid-level engineer in the Apple II division, serving as a humble mascot of the roots of the company and staying as far away from management and corporate politics as he could. He felt with justification that Jobs was not appreciative of the Apple II, which remained the cash cow of the company and accounted for 70% of its sales at Christmas 1984. People in the Apple II group were being treated as very unimportant by the rest of the company, he later said. This was despite the fact that the Apple II was by far the largest selling product in our company for ages and would be for years to come. He even roused himself to do something out of character. He picked up the phone one day and called Scully, berating him for lavishing so much attention on Jobs and the Macintosh division. Frustrated, Wozniak decided to leave quietly to start a new company that would make a universal remote control device he had invented. It would control your television, stereo, and other electronic devices with a simple set of buttons that you could easily program. He informed the head of engineering at the Apple II division, but he didn't feel he was important enough to go out of channels and tell Jobs or Markkula. So Jobs first heard about it when the news leaked in the Wall Street Journal. In his earnest way, Wozniak had openly answered the reporter's questions when he called. Yes, he said, he felt that Apple had been giving short shrift to the Apple II division. Apple's direction has been horrendously wrong for 5 years, he said. Less than 2 weeks later, Wozniak and Jobs traveled together to the White House, where Ronald Reagan presented them with the first National Medal of Technology. The president quoted what President Rutherford Hayes had said when first shown a telephone. An amazing invention, but who would ever want to use one? And then quipped, I thought at the time that he might be mistaken. Because of the awkward situation surrounding Wozniak's departure, Apple did not throw a celebratory dinner afterward. So Jobs and Wozniak went for a walk afterward and ate at a sandwich shop. They chatted amiably, Wozniak recalled, and avoided any discussion of their disagreements. Wozniak wanted to make the parting amicable. It was his style. So he agreed to stay on as a part-time Apple employee at a $20,000 salary and represent the company at events and trade shows. That could have been a graceful way to drift apart. But Jobs could not leave well enough alone. One Saturday, a few weeks after they had visited Washington together, Jobs went to the new Palo Alto studios of Hartmut Esslinger, whose company Frog Design had moved there to handle its design work for Apple. There he happened to see sketches that the firm had made for Wozniak's new remote control device, and he flew into a rage. Apple had a clause in its contract that gave it the right to bar Frog Design from working on other computer-related projects, and Jobs invoked it. I informed them, he recalled, that working with Woz wouldn't be acceptable to us. When the Wall Street Journal heard what happened, it got in touch with Wozniak, who, as usual, was open and honest. He said that Jobs was punishing him. Steve Jobs has a hate for me, probably because of the things I said about Apple, he told the reporter. Jobs's action was remarkably petty, but it was also partly caused by the fact that he understood, in ways that others did not, that the look and style of a product served to brand it. A device that had Wozniak's name on it and used the same design language as Apple's products might be mistaken for something that Apple had produced. It's not personal, Jobs told the newspaper, explaining that he wanted to make sure that Wozniak's remote wouldn't look like something made by Apple. We don't want to see our design language used on other products. Woz has to find his own resources. He can't leverage off Apple's resources. We can't treat him specially. Jobs volunteered to pay for the work that Frog Design had already done for Wozniak, but even so, the executives at the firm were taken aback. When Jobs demanded that they send him the drawings done for Wozniak or destroy them, they refused. Jobs had to send them a letter invoking Apple's contractual right. Herbert Pfeiffer, the design director of the firm, risked Jobs' wrath by publicly dismissing his claim that the dispute with Wozniak was not personal. It's a power play, Pfeiffer told the journal. They have personal problems between them. Hertzfeld was outraged when he heard what Jobs had done. He lived about 12 blocks from Jobs, who sometimes would drop by on his walks. I got so furious about the Wozniak remote episode that when Steve next came over, I wouldn't let him in the house, Hertzfeld recalled. He knew he was wrong, but he tried to rationalize, and maybe in his distorted reality he was able to. Wozniak, always a teddy bear even when annoyed, hired another design firm and even agreed to stay on Apple's retainer as a spokesman.